Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending on where you are when you hear this. Today is the first Sunday in Lent, which began Ash Wednesday just gone, where we performed the imposition of the ashes burnt from last year's leftover palm crosses, and remember our mortal vehicle comes from dust and to dust it returns, even while our spiritual body may soar free with life unending. What is Lent? Well, Lent is a contraction of an old Anglisk word meaning spring. The Greeks call it Megale Tesarakoste, great 40 days, or Megale Nesteia, meaning literally great no food, especially meat or flesh. The Eastern Syriac Church calls the whole 50 days prior to Easter Soma Rabba, which means looking back. And the first 40 of them is a big fast. So, what is Lent? A fast, basically. So says every Christian denomination we know. And like the season of Advent prior to Christmas, it is a period of preparation towards the spiritual entrainment of the energies of new life at Easter. Each week, a new aspect of the preparation is covered, from self-examination this week, to control of speech next week, to understanding, to spiritual refreshment, and finally, humility. The hardest of them all. But what kind of fast is Lent? Well, mostly for our fellow denominations, it's a fast from food, especially meat, traditionally. But since most of us, already don't eat meat, that may well be lost on us. Actually, if Jesus was a Nazarene of the strict observance, or a therapeute, it would also have been lost on him. So in that case, from what would he have fasted these 40 days in a desert? Simply all food. The strict ta'anif of water. Well, actually, there's only one group who engaged in extreme ta'anith, which was, for the most part, forbidden under Jewish law, and that was the Essenes, the group that Jared Massey has shown relatively conclusively to have been the same as the therapeutes and perhaps the same as the early Christians, and which almost certainly was also the group that created the so-called fourth philosophy, condemned by Josephus as being so terrible for fermenting unwinnable rebellion against the Roman Empire and Roman authority. Anyway, whatever kind of fast Jesus would have been involved in, fasting later became associated with the practice of self-emptying or kenosis, which is one of the outcomes of the fasting in the desert. Emptying self of self, kenosis, was seen by the early Syriac or Aramaic church as a major part of the great work of the Living One, the great work of perfection, the cultivation of immortality. So, if we are to empty self of self, it stands to reason that we do a bit of self-examination first, right? Exactly as we ask in today's collect. The epistle for today has Paul instructing the Corinthians to be in the faith, and by so doing become one with God. Now, I assert being in the faith is not about belief in anything at all, but rather holding fast to what Jesus actually represents. Because he represents the two love commandments from Deuteronomy and Leviticus. By following these commandments, Jesus makes clear one is his disciple. If you follow such commandments, you do keep faith with Jesus. Jesus actually tells us that in John 13:35. By this shall all men know you to be my disciples, if ye have love one for another. Being a disciple is keeping faithful to or following the discipline set by the master, by the teacher. And that's what the word means. The word disciple. So, to me, Paul's idea of keeping faith is really Paul's idea of holding fast to the discipline of keeping the two love commandments. Know the Lord thy God, love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love thy neighbor as thyself. The gospel for today, also from John, tells us God gave his, quote, only begotten Son, unquote, that whoever believed on him might be saved, yet he came into the world and was not accepted or believed, because he brought life, and men loved darkness as their deeds were evil and wanted to hide them. So I don't want to dwell on technicality too much, but Tyndale's quote-unquote only begotten Son is a very bad translation of the Greek word monogenes via the Vulgate Latin Unigenitus, which mistranslation has been copied over and over and over again. But just because even millions of people say it does not make it true. I am sure that each one of us can think of examples of that right now. So too, in the case of this word, monogenes means alone born, that is, born of one parent. And it has always meant that. Pallas Athena is described as monogenes, springing whole and armed from the head of Zeus in one of the Orphic hymns. And that comes from the classical period. The phoenix is described being born from the ashes of its earlier self by Clement as monogenes. And that comes from the Christian era. Too many scholars support earlier people's mistakes and perpetuate them because it suits their purpose to pull the wool over the eyes of the ignorant. We must not be like that. The rulers of darkness are very real. We know that now. And they would like nothing more than to keep us in darkness forever. So, self-examination is the way out of this. And self-examination demands that we be careful about these things. And that we contend we are part of the wisdom tradition in this little group, in this church, also demands such care of us. Are we not budding therapeutae? Is it not this church's special purpose in the world to preserve and uphold the culture, the tradition, the healing power of an underground stream, a very old tradition in wisdom, mostly lost to the world as best we can? Indeed, such is our high moral purpose. The promulgation, study and maintenance of that wisdom to which we have over many lifetimes been devoted under many guises. This is something to remember, especially when it comes to Lent. And that means understanding what the writings are really telling us is also important. The words are important and the meanings of the words are actually important. Not a good idea to skip over them. So what else is the gospel telling us? Well, basically, that we have hidden our evil acts in darkness. We must not think that, quote, men, unquote, means someone else. It means us. It means we have tried to hide our faults from ourselves. It is not so bad hiding them from other people, believe it or not. The really, really big problem, the really, really bad thing is hiding them from yourself. Because if you hide your faults from yourself, you will never improve. You will never even get the opportunity to empty yourself because you'll never, ever see it. Now, I personally take a more compassionate view on this kind of thing than you will find written down, and I believe that the original Christians also took a reasonably tolerant and compassionate view. Because you see, you hide your faults from yourself for two reasons. The first is, it's frankly difficult to function if you forever have them in view. I mean, it really is. If you're always looking at your own faults, you're not going to get much done. And the second reason is that any fault you have, in fact, represents the best you have yet been able to come up with as a solution to the problems life throws at you, even if that best solution is, in fact, a faulty one. You see, your faults, those faults that are with you for a long time, are not simple mistakes. They are structural. They support your identity, your long-term behaviors, some of which are very laudable, your internal sense of justice, of rightness, and so on. You know, people always do what they think is best, even though it may not be the best. And they always think that what they do is best, even though it may not be, after the fact. So, to find your faults and also to give them up is no easy task. Mostly, we are blind to them. Mostly, we think we are right. Mostly, we have no idea where to start with ourselves. So the thing to do is to start with where you are. If we are going to learn how to empty self of self and make progress on the path, on the great way, we start where we are. We can use other people as a mirror with which to see ourselves via how they react. We can use Lent as an opportunity to discover what we can put down. And Lent, the energies of Lent, are so very appropriate for that. What does it take to put down wrath, indolence, spiritual pride, deceit? you know, maybe you can't give up consuming flesh if that is indeed a fault. Maybe you can't stop under-delivering on promises. And maybe you can't begin to listen curiously to others when you'd rather talk. And maybe you can't give up fear and take on freedom in the face of your own cowardice. Or maybe you can. When you use Lent as an opportunity to find these things out, step by careful step, you are like the therapeutai and preserving their esoteric legacy. If you simply try to force yourself, what will you really learn? How will you know what to put together and what to separate? How will you understand the meaning of your own life, really? How will you understand the connection between human beings and the living one? We are heirs to this legacy. Our job is not to pridefully kill out the passions, a disastrously simplistic instruction if ever there was one, despite it coming from somebody expert and famous. Our job is to understand ourselves, love ourselves, experiment with different disciplines on ourselves, and test ourselves carefully to find out if we can let go of a fault yet or not. That is the careful work of self-emptying, of kenosis. That is also the work that brings about awakening as a child in the superior worlds. And that is the birthright of all who walk the path of the Son of Man, who is the way, the truth, and the light, and so return to the Father. Magic in our actions, knowing death before dying, that at death we shall not die. Thanks for your attention.